This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 325, for the weekend of July 20th through July 22nd. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office. I was going to say something, and pretty much screwed up what I was saying. So anyways, that was a very non-sequitous opening. So, Art, how's it going over there?
It's going good. I was off today dealing with that 100-plus degree weather and walking 13 miles. So, I can't complain. Tomorrow will be another day. And we're talking, I've heard it was days for like the next week. So, yeah, there's that. But other than that.
Yeah. What did we do to deserve this?
I moved to Texas coming.
Well, but still, it's going to be 100. I don't know if it's going to be. It might be like low 90s on the West Coast where I'm at. But it still feels hot. It's still heat stroke every time I go out on the bike. So this is a podcast about movies and stuff. So first thing we usually talk about is how the box office did last week. So since I brought it up, computer. Okay, here we go. Weekend's box results. Specifically, 13th through the 15th. Here's your top five. At number one, we have new release, Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation, $44.1 million. At number two, in its second week release, we have Ant-Man and Wasp. At number three, we have Skyscraper, new release, at $4.9 million. At number four, Incredibles 2, in its fifth week of release, at $16.3 million, and at number 5, in its fourth week release, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, $16.2 million. So, total gross so far for Incredibles, $535.9, Jurassic World, $364 million. So, yeah, not bad at all.
And decent opening, Transylvania, taking the number one spot, so we can't complain about that. Ant-Man's only its second week and already broke 100,000. Yeah, these are good numbers.
Yeah, I don't know how much they're expecting out of Ant-Man.
Yeah, I don't know. Think they should. There's no budget listed.
I mean, they should be happy. You would think. Interestingly enough, number Sorry to Bother You, went up to 805 theaters, which is a lot, and according to 478%. I hear it's really good, but I guess it's science fiction, loosely some. I don't know.
I think it's just, someone with a natural talent.
Okay. All right. It's a sci-fi comedy.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So
the only reason I said that, not that I've seen it or know anything about it, I just sci-fi comedy.
That's interesting. I've seen the trailer for this. So, and I thought...
I mean, interesting cast. Stanfield, Tessa Thompson, Armie Hammer, Cruz, David Cross, Patton Oswalt, Lily James, Forrest Whitaker, Rosario Dawson, Denver, Steven Yeun.
Yeah. Do you know this movie? I thought we talked about it at one point.
No.
Okay. So, it's about this black guy who finds he has the uncanny ability to have white guy voice while on the phone. And so, he starts climbing the corporate ladder because of his ability to sound white on the phone in, like, sales and other things that are phone-related, customer service, blah, blah, blah. So it didn't strike me as a superpower type ability. It's just he came off as very white. He talks when he's on the phone, the thing. And it's a comedy. I just didn't see as much of a sci-fi. But maybe I'm missing something because, like I said, all I've seen is a trailer. I haven't actually seen.
So he could be a mystery man, too. Yeah, one of those.
Totally.
Do a team up.
That is a middleman type power. Yeah, for sure. Or there was a Playing for Keeps was a novel, and I am totally blanking on who the podcast community for novel published. It's called Keepsy Brown, and And it was superheroes who have, like, these third-tier level powers.
Oh, you're talking about Merle Lafferty. Yeah.
Merle Lafferty, yeah. That's the one. Yes. Thank you so much. That would have bugged me.
Well, it was bugging me as soon as you said it.
There you go. All right. All right. So, moving on.
Okay. So, now that we have completed talking about the box office last week, let's talk about what's going to be at the theaters this weekend. And so, we have two movies. Art, why don't you tell us about the first one, and it's on which one you're about.
Right. I'm going to lead off with Mamma Mia, because I love musicals. I'm not a huge ABBA fan, and the first Mamma Mia was all right. They could have not let Pierce Brosnan sing. Other than that, I think the movie was pretty good. All right, so there you go. My computer is being a pain in the butt. Mamma Mia, here we go again, has an 84% rating on the tomato meter, 69 reviews counted, 58 fresh, 11 rotten, 88% out of 800 users who see it. Are you kidding me?
Come on over there.
I'm having technical difficulties. My screen is locking up, and I have no clue.
All right, so why don't I do this? I'm going to stop the recording. Okay. I'm going to hang up the Skype call. You restart your laptop.
It's not.
What else?
Yeah. Give me 1 second. Yeah.
Okay.
Pause it for a second. All right. Let's see. The difference. No, I think I'm going to have to try restarting.
Okay, no problem.
All right, I don't have to hang up, though.
Okay.
Appears to be working.
Okay, so as soon as you're ready, just jump in the Mamma Mia.
Okay. All right. First up, we have Mamma Mia. Here we go again. It is 84% fresh on the tomato meter. 69 reviews counted, 58 fresh, 11 rotten. 88% want to see it out of 804 user ratings. As the film goes back and forth in time to show how relationships forged in the past resonate in the present, James will play the role of young Donna, filling the roles of young Rosie and young Tana, are Alexis Davies, a brilliant young mind, and Jessica Keenan-Wynn, Broadway's Beautiful. Young Sam will be played by Jeremy Irvine, Warhorse, while young Bill is Josh Dillon, Allied, and young Harry is Hugh Skinner, Kill Your Friends. Rated PG-13 for some suggestive material. Comedy, musical, performing arts. Directed by Ole Parker, written by Ole Parker. Runtime, 114 minutes. That is not a lot of description there. More about who's in it. They
totally could have just said, here's the songs that are in the movie.
Yeah, they could have did something. I don't know. So we've got all the main characters returning for the present day. Meryl Streep, Pierce Brosnan, Colin Firth, Stellan Skarsgård, Amanda Seyfried. So, yeah, I don't... Cher. I enjoyed the first one well enough for what it was. We'll see if Brittany wants to go see it. Other than that, this probably won't be something I see until it comes out on cable.
I have successfully avoided the first Mamma Mia, and I'll probably try to do the same for the second one.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, what are you going to do? All right, so let's talk about some blurbage here. Mara Reinstein from Us Weekly, top critic. A joyful, blissed-out summer treat, so sunny that audiences should apply SPF 30 before entering the theater. And to be devil's advocate, a rotten review from Kristen Page Kirby from the Washington Post. Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again is not a good musical. 1 out of 4 stars.
Yeah, it's not setting anybody on fire.
And then I guess we have to talk about some insight from Down Under. Matthew Toomey from ABC Radio Brisbane. I love musicals, and I was a big fan of Mamma Mia, but I got to be honest, this was a letdown. C+. So, yes. But this movie is going to make a ton of money, just because I doubt that there's going to be a lot of female skewing movies over the next month and a half.
That's true. There is that always to consider.
So we'll have to keep an eye on that. All right. So our next movie, the second of two coming out in the theater this weekend, speaking of two, Equalizer 2, 39% on the tomato meter. Out of 36, 14 fresh, 22 rotten, and out of a paltry 1344 number of users, 97% want to see it. So what is Equalizer 2 about? Well, Denzel Washington returns to one of his signature roles in the first sequel of his career. Is that right? Robert McCall serves as an unflinching justice for the exploited and oppressed. But how far will he go when that is someone he loves? Rated R for brutal violence throughout, language, and some drug content. Your genre is action and adventure, mystery and suspense. Written by Richard Wenk, directed by Antoine Fuqua. And your runtime is 129 minutes. So additional actors in this movie, Bill Pullman as Brian Plummer. I love the M's. And Melissa Leo. That's all I see. So this is another pass.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to go see the first one. Because I doubt very much that my brother's doll is going to ask me to see this one. So that'd be the only reason why I'd want to see him out of order. Although I've heard really good things about his performance in this. So, I mean, the first one at least. I haven't heard anything about this one yet, but. Yeah, the first Equalizer was, you know, I heard it did well, and it must have done well enough for them to get him back to do another one. So yeah, I watched the Equalizer. We talked about this before, but the TV show back in the day. And so that has me somewhat interested, but not enough to really go out of my way.
Okay, so I'm going to read two of the blurbs at the bottom here from Andrew Wright. I guess the outlet is The Stranger, Seattle, Washington. The Equalizer 2 tries hard to recreate that primal red meat formula, but it takes far too long puttering around to really deliver the exploitation goods. Just get to the equalizing already. No score or anything like that. And then we go to Lee Patch from the Herald Sun, Australia. The climactic dispensation of rough justice is almost worth the price of admission. However, the grind of getting there could have you requesting a discount. They gave it a 2.5 out of 5.
Okay. Yeah, the critics aren't really feeling it. And that's not surprising.
And kind of on the weird side, we have Kane Noble-Davies from Filmeek Australia. Builds on the low-flash action chops of the original to bring us more of the good stuff. Rating is 17 out of 20.
What is going on there?
So I'm gonna have to look into that later.
Somebody wanted a little more granularity in their rating system. We're not gonna go with a 5-point system. We're not gonna go with a 10-point system. No, we're gonna go with a 20-point system, so that we can really get in there and let people know what we think. I mean, why not just go with a percentage?
Oh, Film Inc. rates movies out of $20. The score indicates the amount we believe a ticket to be to the movie to be worth.
Yeah, really?
That's what it says.
That's
filminc.com.au.
I couldn't see paying $17 to see a movie.
Well, $17 Australian. I don't know if there's an exchange rate there. But
there is an exchange rate there, and okay, that's...
So, yeah, that's way too complicated.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can find... Well, if they do... No, it's just about a bunch of other stuff. All right, so that's going to conclude our look at the two movies coming out wide release this weekend. And so now we're going to move on over to a little segment we call Share Time, where Art and myself talk about what we've been watching since the last time we recorded, which happens to be a week ago. We'd also play voicemails, but I went back and added Tad's voicemail to the previous show. So now we are voicemail-less, or voicemail-less. So, Art, what have you been up to?
Okay, well, you know what? I can't remember the last time we did a show 2 weeks in a row. So I haven't been up to much. I watched the World Cup final. I know people will be shocked and aghast that I watched some sports ball. And I actually really enjoyed it. It was a good game. I hung out with some friends. They invited me to do it. I had English breakfast while I did it, and I had a lot of fun. Other than that, I took Aubrey to go see Hotel Transylvania 3, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It was, you know, more of the same. It's not anything that's it's not going to change the world or anything, but if you enjoyed 1 and 2, then 3 is totally worth seeing, because it's a great follow-up, and there will be a 4. They're going to keep right on rolling. I mean, it opened at number 1, $44 million. That's a good showing. I could not see them not, you know, they've got a TV series based on it as well. So yeah, I think it's going to keep plugging along, and like I said, if you saw 1 and 2, go see 3. You won't be disappointed. And that is it for my 1 week share time.
All right. Just a word about Hotel Transylvania, just to give it some context with the other two Hotel Transylvanias. This is the first one that opened in July. Number 1 and number 2 both opened in September. The first one was on 3,300 screens. Second one was on 3,700 screens. The last one was on 4,200 screens. And so the opening for number 1 was 42 million, number 2 was 48, and number 3 was 44. So it's trending down a little bit, but you know, but this is the first year they've done it in July as opposed to September. So yeah, I'm sure that this will just be a blip in the
road. Yeah, we'll see with it being a summer release, it could have a lot more of a long tail.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens over the coming weeks.
All right, so that was our share time. My share time, I'm also going to talk about one thing, but it's going to have nothing to do with sports, to the surprise of everyone. Monday night, A&E had a documentary on Freaks and Geeks, and I was completely riveted because I loved Freaks and Geeks, and I still love Freaks and Geeks. And it's getting to a point where I'm starting to reevaluate what was the most tragic cancellation of a one season show. Freaks and Geeks might move ahead of Firefly.
Okay.
Because when you look at all of the people that were on Freaks and Geeks.
Oh yeah. Seth Rogen, no doubt.
James Franco, Jason Segel, those three guys became huge stars. Linda Cardellini, not so much. Busy Phillips, I know she's done some stuff. I think that she either wrote or co-wrote Blades of Glory. I also found out that Sam, the boy Weir in Freaks and Geeks, he was a co-writer on Spider-Man Homecoming, which I completely missed. So, it just, you know, when they talk about in the beginning that where I went to high school or where I grew up is not represented in television because everything is either LA or New York. And they felt like they had to do the Midwest right. And so this really came from Paul Feig and Judd Apatow. And hearing, you know, the blow by blow of their fights with the network, you know, it's very similar to Firefly. It's also very similar that, you know, they weren't aired regularly. Mm-hmm. It's just heartbreaking, but it's such a good show. And I'm happy that I got to share it with my daughter and I watched it because I still don't understand the appeal, but She loves James Franco. My God. All right. So that was one documentary I watched. Also, apparently, something happened with the rights to Harry Potter because USA had a Harry Potter weekend. So I ended up rewatching Prisoner of Azkaban and Half-Blood Prince. And I tried to watch part two again, but I had to turn it off just because of the departures they took from the book. But they did have some interesting little interstitials with the stars of, Fantastic Beasts. Because, in November, and I saw this like 8 times, that Fantastic Beasts: The Crimes of Grindelwald will be out this November. Mm-hmm. And the only one I could really, the interstitial that I remember, is that they were talking to Dan Fogler. And we love Dan Fogler over here. And they're talking to him about, Prisoner of Azkaban is his favorite movie, which I instantly agree with. That's my favorite one, too. And he loved the scene where Harry cast the Patronus to repel the Dementors. And he just thought that the whole idea of the Patronus was so cool. You can go online and they tell you, what your Patronus is. And he said, mine was a dolphin. I just thought that was so awesome. My Patronus is a dolphin. So I thought that's out there, but still, brought a little, chuckle a little bit. Because of some real life stuff going on, my mother-in-law has been staying with us, so I had to stop watching The Punisher. So I'm about, fourth of the way through The Punisher. I'm also this weekend going to try to finish last season's of Killjoys because Killjoys comes back in 2 days. We're recording this on July 18th. And it comes back July 20th. So you have been notified. All right. Okay. So that's going to be it for share time. And so now we're going to move over to the last segment of the show where we talk about news. And Art, you're up first.
Okay. So this really caught my eye. Walmart planning its own SVOD service, streaming video on demand. And I was like, oh my goodness, everybody's getting into the game now. When it comes to video on demand services, there are two groups of options. There's regular video on demand, like iTunes, Amazon, and Vudu, where one pays for an individual film or episode season of a TV series. Then there's the subscription video on demand services like Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, HBO Now, where you pay a monthly fee for limited access to a large library of film and TV titles. Now there's a new report at the information that suggests Walmart is considering a move into the SVOD ranks with a low-cost streaming option, which will reportedly be less than $8 a month, but might be ad-supported. This would be in addition to Walmart's own Vudu, a VOD service which offers thousands of titles to buy or rent, and ad-supported free streaming element. It's not clear what, if any, original programming would be included if the company moves forward with the new SVOD service, and it suggests they are still quite undecided about doing it at this point. So we shall see what happens there.
All right, I do have to mention something in regarding to, you can't remember the last time we recorded 2 weeks in a row?
Was it recently?
Okay, so episode...
It feels like it's been a while.
Episodes 320 and 321, which would be, considering tonight 325, that was 4 shows ago. We did 2 in a row. And then we had episodes... Wow, I got to go way back for this. I know, good radio. I believe we did 4 in a row. 315 to 319.
319. Okay, wait, here's the problem with that. Okay, so 4 episodes ago, but that's not 4 weeks ago, because those last 4 episodes between now and then were all multiple weeks between those. And I think one of those breaks was like 3 weeks long.
Those were all consecutive.
I'm talking about, you said 320 and 321, and this is going to be 325?
320 and 321 both were recorded a week apart. And then 315.
From 21 to 22, from 22 to 23, from 23 to 24, from 24 to 25, there's 4 episodes in there, and I'm saying none of those were consecutive. So even if those were 2 weeks apart, we'd be talking about 2 months ago was when we did it. And I think one of those was at least 3 weeks.
Yes. You'd be correct, but it's not that far back.
Okay. I just said I can't remember. that I can't remember what happened two months
ago? Like,
that's not a big surprise.
Okay. So, like, 315 was on March 25th, and then 316 was April 2nd, 317 was April 9th, 318 was April 16th, and then 319 was April 24th. So we had a good month.
Yeah, we had a good run there.
3 months ago. All right. Okay.
3 months
all
ago.
Right. So through that. Okay. You might remember that it's the 10th anniversary of The Dark Knight. So with that, Dark Knight is coming back to the cinemas for 1 week. So they're going to have an exclusive one-week engagement that's going to begin August 24th, and it's going to be in four theaters. So L.A., New York City, San Francisco, Toronto. And they're going to show one screening a day. And in L.A., it's going to be the AMC Universal City Walk. And I don't know if we have any listeners in New York City, San Francisco, or Toronto. Maybe Toronto. It's going to be the Ontario Place Cinesphere IMAX in Toronto, if anyone lives in Toronto. But, I'd love to see it on the big screen again. Hopefully I can make it happen. All right, what do you got next?
Okay, so this caught my eye. China pulls epic fantasy Asura after one weekend. Sold as China's most expensive movie ever, made the $110 million fantasy epic Asura opened light last week and earned just $7.1 million over its opening weekend. So this is like Avatar. Avatar opening up after a few days, only making a few million dollars, and then just pulling it completely out of the air and saying, oh, no, never mind. So the film producers, including Jack Ma's Alibaba Pictures, decided to take desperate action and pulled the movie from cinemas at 10 p.m. on Saturday night. According to THR, the statement announcing the pulling of the film offered no explanation for the unprecedented move, but a Zhenjihan film rep says the company plans to make some changes to the film and re-release it again. Li Wu stars as a young boy who must embark on an epic journey to save Asura, a godly dimension of pure desire, after it is threatened by a coup from a lower kingdom. Tony Ka Fai Lung and, oh my goodness, I'm killing myself here, Karina Lau also star. Asura's producers are also reportedly alleging they were targeted by a particularly aggressive smear campaign of bad reviews, with a large number posted by suspicious accounts immediately after the film's release. So apparently the fanboys in China are very upset over something, and they got that movie pulled.
Wow. Yeah, unfortunately, the entitled fanboys win.
The trolls for the win.
All right, so let's talk about Amazon. We haven't talked about Amazon in a week. Okay, here we go. Amazon plans Tales from the Loop TV series. Amazon has announced that they have given a straight-to-series order for Tales from the Loop, a new 8-episode series based on iconic sci-fi artwork. What? So we're going to base a show based on artwork. The story follows a town of people who live above the Loop, a machine built to unlock and explore the mysteries of the universe, making things possible that were previously thought of as pure science fiction. Some blah, blah, blah about all the people that we don't know. And the series will debut globally on Amazon in more than 200 countries and territories. Okay, so this kind of resonated with me because Tales from the Loop is an award-winning RPG that looks vaguely similar, and I think they might have used the same guy's artwork. The guy's name is Simon Stalenhag. And it almost looked like Amazon's making a TV show based off an RPG.
That's why, because when you said Tales from the Loop, I'm like, that's an RPG. And then you said based on art, I'm like, oh, maybe there's something I'm not knowing here.
Maybe they don't want to lose everybody when they say it based on RPG.
They don't want that negative connotation. Oh, it's a D&D movie? Forget that.
All right, go ahead.
First trailer, J.J. Abrams produced Overlord. Paramount Pictures and Bad Robot have premiered the first trailer for Overlord, the upcoming Nazi zombie film that many suspected, and still do, would turn out to be a fourth Cloverfield film. J.J. Abrams produces the project, which will be Bad Robot's first ever R-rated film. and co-hatched the idea with the film screenwriter Billy Ray, who worked on Shattered Glass, The Hunger Games, Julius Avery, who worked on Son of a Gun, helms a film which is set on the eve of D-Day. A group of American paratroopers are dropped behind enemy lines to carry out a mission crucial to the invasion's success, but soon begin to realize there is more going on in this Nazi-occupied village than a simple military operation. So I think that's interesting for a number of things. You know, A, J.J. Abrams, B, another connection to Cloverfield, and C, zombie Nazis. I mean, you know, what could go wrong?
All right. Another friend of Backseat Producers, well, not really, but we really like his work, Duncan Jones is teasing his new project. A few days back, Moon and Warcraft director Duncan Jones teased that he was looking at doing a comic book adaptation at his next project, but didn't say what the property would be. At the same time, it was confirmed that it would not be a DC Comics property. Well, now in a, oh, this is super reputable, in a new Twitter posting, he seems to have revealed what it is, Rogue Trooper. Jones in the clips says it's a planned take on a property in the 2000 AD Megaverse, which includes properties like Judge Dredd, Durham Red, ABC Warriors, and Strontium Dog. It also specifically states it's not Dredd, but something else before showing off a man's mohawk from behind, leading to the natural conclusion he's referring to Rogue Trooper, a sci-fi comic from Gary Finley Day and Dave Gibbons about Rogue, a genetically created blue-skinned manufactured super soldier on New Earth, which is mostly toxic now due to chemical and biological warfare. In this world, the GI's entire personality is downloaded at the time of his death onto biochips for later retrieval. Rogue has his three former comrades' chips with him attached to his equipment following a massacre. Rogue goes AWOL in search of the traitor general responsible. What kind of adaptation Jones intend to yield, be it film or television or other, is unclear at this point. But I am mildly intrigued about this.
Interesting. There was a video game based on this, and I thought, I didn't realize that it was based on a comic book property. I think back during the PS2 days, if I remember correctly.
All right, what do you got next?
Okay, so the full trailer dropped, and I saw it at one of the movies I went to for the new Edgerton Fox Robin Hood. I remember we talked about seeing screenshots of this a while ago and how it looked. Some of the clothing made it look like a dystopian future. It's not. It's just the clothing is just very edgy and kind of modernistic, but the setting is still classic Robin Hood, that era. So Lionsgate has premiered both character posters and the official full trailer for Otto Bathurst's action-adventure feature Robin Hood, which opens November 21st, so it's still a ways out. Taron Egerton plays a war-hardened Robin who, along with Moorish commander Little John, Jamie Foxx, return home from the Crusades to discover a Sherwood Forest rife with corruption and evil. Teaming with a band of outlaws, they take matters into their own hands to set things right and mount an audacious revolt against the corrupt English crown. The film also stars Jamie Dornan as Will Scarlet, Eve Hewson as Maid Marian, Tim Minich as Friar Tuck, Paul Anderson as Guy Gisborne, and Ben Mendelsohn as the Sheriff of Nottingham. It very much has it almost has an Assassin's Creed feel to it. From the trailer. He is very much in the shadows, kind of, you know, running around, but there's also a lot of big explosions and some... maybe even a little bit of steampunkiness going on. It's an interesting mashup, and the trailer had me intrigued. We'll have to see where this goes.
All right, so speaking of trailers, probably the most, how am I going to say this, one of the most horrific trailers I've seen, and mainly because I was with my 15-year-old son at the time. When we went to go see Deadpool 2, we saw the trailer for the Happy Time Murders. And so if you've seen this trailer, what I'm about to say is not going to make any sense. Apparently there was a gag that was cut from the trailer because it went too far. And so they talked, Cinema Blend talked to the director about what they had to take out. And he says, we did have a bar scene with a bartender puppet that had a singing penis, which was a very funny joke that we decided not to do. That one won't make it in the movie. We probably have stepped over in a couple places. That I'll learn as I get it all together, and then maybe we'll pull it back a little bit. But the idea is that really it is uncensored. It's really quite dirty, and it's mostly language and implied sexuality. But it's not graphically sexual. I might dispute the three cans of silly string at the end of the trailer, as it's not graphically okay. sexual. But anyways, so yeah, I don't... I do have some morbid curiosity about this, but I don't know. I don't know if this needs to be made. And we probably should have stopped with Team America World Police.
yeah, that went pretty far.
All right, I got one more. So we got next.
Okay, well, I'm gonna try and take us up a bit. Creators tease Sony's planned Spider-Verse. This fall, Venom marks the true start for Sony Pictures' plan to exploit its Marvel Comics properties outside of the core Spider-Man comic. We know both Silver and Black and Morbius, the Living Vampire films, are on the way. Now a story has been posted trying to gauge Sony's overall game plan for this venture. They spoke with Venom producer Avi Arad, who discussed the appeal of his project, saying, "This is an origin story, and we have to try to make it the beginning of a long story. Kids love Venom. It's something about it that attracts the anti-hero sensibility. So we are very excited." In terms of Silver and Black, the movie featuring the teaming of Thief Black Cat and mercenary Silver Sable, they say it will have a Thelma and Louise-style comedic tone. Filmmaker Emily Carmichael met with Sony about the project and tells the outlet, "At one of my early meetings of the project, I got a peek of a phone book-sized compendium of characters Sony has the rights to. All characters tangentially related to Spider-Man. It's a cinematic universe, all right." Comic book writer Brian Michael Bendis says he's had a number of meetings with Sony and is optimistic about the Spider-Verse's potential. "I happen to have heard some of the plans and have not been made public. You're asking if they're cool. I thought they were very cool. Fans wouldn't be annoyed with what they're doing. The people who grew up wanting these movies are now making them. And not just a crappy Spider-Man movie, a really good Spider-Man movie. Everyone's aiming high." Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes as they continue exploring other properties related to but outside of Spider-Man.
Very interesting. All right, so speaking of morbidly curious, my last article is going to be from the Odd News file here. And this is from Cracked again. 5 world cities that have weird problems that you never knew about. And so it says, every city has this problem. L.A. has its traffic. New Orleans has its hurricanes, and Cleveland has its deep existential malaise from which few escape. But sometimes a town has chronic issues that are so uniquely and unexpectedly weird that you would never believe it was happening at all, much less it was a serious problem. For example, number 5, every October, Rome is absolutely drowned in bird shit. Rome is one of humanity's most enduring settlements. The Eternal City has survived the weight of thousands of years of history and still stands proud. Perhaps that's why it's so funny that every year around October, millions of starlings migrate from northern and eastern Europe and shit all over it. We know what you're thinking. Bird shit on my car all the time. Where's my parade? How bad could it really be, right? In the mornings, the birds descend on nearby farms to gorge on olives, then settle down to rest and pass all those olives out in the warmer urban areas, caking Rome's roads, well, let's picture for a moment, buildings and vehicles with noxious, slippery guano. Residents are forced to carry umbrellas around town, and authorities spread de-slicking agents on the asphalt to prevent motorcyclists from skidding off the road. When it rains shit, cartoon logic reigns supreme. So that's number 5, Rome. Number 4, they got something about New York City's tap water. Boston has an army of obnoxious fake Buddhist monks. This is crazy. If you asked an average American to describe a Buddhist monk in one word, you'd probably hear peaceful. That chill reputation is the perfect cover for a small army of con artists and fraudsters who only dress like monks to bleed Boston dry of both its loose change and its patience. The fake monks, possibly funded by a Chinese gang that provide their robes and visas, first appeared at Boston's heroic Faneuil Hall a couple years ago. They solicit donations from tourists and locals, often tricking people into accepting fake prayers and cheaply made tchotchkes, and then demanding cash. Faneuil Hall fought back by posting warnings which advised locals and tourists to ignore the fake monk mafia. But the fake monks simply spread to other parts of the city with a focus on tourist hotspots like parks and the waterfront. They can legally panhandle as long as they don't get too aggressive, but they toe a fine line of obnoxiousness. It's bad for local businesses, but it's also bad for Boston's real charities. People are only so giving, and the monks can quickly sap any goodwill that could be going toward nobler efforts, like getting the entire city speech therapy. And there's kind of a theme here, because number two is about how San Francisco is full of crap. There's so many people in San Francisco that the person to toilet ratio is like really high. so much so that there is a app called San Francisco that whether it maps people that have gone in public, kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I thought here. I thought, you know, apps are the future. They help you find the things you need. Where is the nearest public restroom to me? No, that went the completely opposite of that type of direction.
Yeah, it says here that there aren't enough to accommodate the city's many asses, and as one of the great works of human literature taught us, everybody poops.
Everybody poops.
The city's growing homeless population has been forced to defecate on the streets. The situation is dire enough that people are creating interactive poop maps like Jen Wong's Human Wasteland, which lists all public feces reported to the city's 311 hotline. San Francisco has only 126 bathroom facilities that are accessible to the homeless, to say nothing of any broke tourists with a sudden urge to take a load off. And the majority of those public bathrooms close at night, leaving only 28 toilets in the city that are available 24/7. Estimated the city needs at least 500. That is a crippling crapper deficit. All right. So this next one has nothing to do with human excrement of any kind, but this is the craziest of the five. Malmo needs help with grenade control. Sweden leads the world in recycling, as well as another less desirable statistic, grenade attacks. They were a rarity prior to 2014, but since then, rates have exploded. Grenades go for about $12.50 on the street, or come for free with the purchase of a black market gun. Coupons. With a deal like that, you can't afford not to get one. In 2017, there were 20 explosions, with another 39 undetonated grenades seized. The overall list of recent incidents is something you expect from a country on the brink of civil war, not one of the planet's most prosperous nations. It's worse in Malmo, where 30 explosions occurred in 2015 alone. Police have advised residents to be on the lookout for the many unexploded grenades they believe still litter the streets, which really puts San Francisco's problem in a new light. Not even the cops are safe. Explosions have been reported at police stations in Helsingborg, Uppsala, Katrineholm, and of course Malmo. And considering the attacks that have already occurred in 2018, the trend doesn't look like it's slowing down. It's mostly thanks to Sweden's open border with Denmark. The two countries are connected by the Öresund Bridge, a popular route for trafficking unused weapons left over from the Balkan conflicts of the 90s. Sellers are eager to unload excess grenades while they're still functional, and the buyers, mostly Swedish gangs, are eager to get a leg up on their competition. It would be an inspiring story about the adaptability of capitalism if it weren't about people exploding. Okay, There is your top five world cities with weird problems that you never knew about.
What are you doing to me, Jeff? I mean, what are you doing to me?
You're welcome.
Okay, once again, trying to pull us up on the back end. On a much lighter note, not doing with poop and crap and explosions. Wow. All right, Birds of Prey character lineup revealed. So we've talked about DC Comics working on a Birds of Prey movie. Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn is going to be featured in it. She's actually also working as a producer. And so the other people they have been pulled in is we're looking at Cassandra Cain, Black Canary, Huntress, Renee Montoya are the characters set to join Harley in the first film, which is being helmed by Kathy Yan and penned by Christina Hodson. Additionally, reports suggest that the film's villain will be a character from Batman's Rogues Gallery, one that has never been seen on the big screen before. That could include the likes of the Black Mask, Clayface, Red Hood, the Mad Hatter, the Ventriloquist, Firefly, Solomon Grundy, and Hush, most of whom have been on TV, but not on film. So they are very much pushing for an R-rated girl gang movie. But Birds of Prey has no set release date yet. So it's still out in the ether, but it is moving forward. Hopefully soon we'll be hearing names attached to those characters, actors' names. And that will take me out for news.
All right. And that is going to take us to the end of this particular episode of Backseat Box Office. So, everyone, thank you for listening. Our website is backseatproducers.com, where you can find back episodes of this show and the other podcast, Backseat Producers. We also have a voicemail line that you can call and tell us about what you've been up to one way or another. Other than that... again, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time. Art, what do you have to say?
Good night, everybody, and give us a call if you got something to talk about.